U.S. Capitol Police are ramping up security at the complex today, concerned about a possible plot by a militia group to breach the building. The threat is connected to a baseless conspiracy theory that former President Donald Trump will rise to power again on March 4th, which used to be Inauguration Day. This comes just 2 months after pro-Trump rioters stormed the Capitol in a failed insurrection. For more, we're joined by Ben Collins, who covers disinformation, extremism, and the internet for NBC News. Ben, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And so, Ben, the FBI and Homeland Security are warning about online chatter among extremist groups discussing plans to take over the Capitol on March 4th, today. So what's so significant about this date?
Well, after the 6th and the 20th in January, QAnon supporters kind of ran out of ideas, basically. So they went diving, really. And they found March 4th, which in the sovereign citizen movement means something. Sovereign citizens are basically tax evaders. They're, you know, decades-old conspiracy theorists who believe that the United States government hasn't been legitimate since Ulysses S. Grant was president in the 1800s. He was inaugurated on March 4th in 1869, and they don't believe that there's been a legitimate government since then. Now, QAnon supporters, they're not all the way in on this, right? They don't really fully believe all this stuff, but they're desperate for some sort of answer that isn't Joe Biden as the president and reality is reality. So there has been chatter around this date in the last few weeks and months, but they've since then sort of tried to pull back, realizing that there are no events scheduled. There are no big rallies scheduled. Last time when they got a date going, you know, the president said, okay, all right, we'll do the 6th. That's not what happened this time. And right now they're kind of reeling.
Well, I think you're getting at an important point, which is you mentioned two other previously important dates. January 6th, of course, was the date of the attempted insurrection. Also January 20th. I mean, it makes me wonder, Ben, that after today passes and Donald Trump doesn't rise to power again, I mean, what comes next for these extremist groups? I mean, do they just give up? Because what it seems like is every time their hopes are dashed, it's actually not a reality check. And instead, they just form a new conspiracy theory around some new date.
Yeah, you know, there was a book from the 70s called When Prophecy Fails, which followed a specific cult that had a doomsday, and that doomsday passed. And it followed in real time how these people, they didn't just stop at their doomsday. They said, oh, we must have done something to prevent this. So they become more hardened in their beliefs as time goes on. And that's what's happening with especially the QAnon movement, but also militia movements. They believe that this is an ongoing struggle, that maybe Donald Trump wasn't the best conduit for their struggle.
Well, the unwillingness to give up on these ideas, even amid failed prophecies, might help explain why this is such a persistent problem. Because earlier this week, we heard from the FBI director, Christopher Wray. He told the Senate Judiciary Committee that the Capitol riot was the culmination of a domestic terror threat that's been growing for years. Here's what he said.
Unfortunately, as you noted, Mr. Chairman, January 6th was not an isolated event. The problem of domestic terrorism has been metastasizing across the country for a long time now, and it's not going away anytime soon.
Now, Wray also confirmed that after Black Lives Matter demonstrations over the summer, the FBI did increase its focus on anti-government extremists like Antifa, but still listed that below the threat posed by white supremacists. And yet I wonder, Ben, I mean, is it possible that the agency got distracted by political pressure from the Trump administration, and that's why white supremacists were able to gain power seemingly in the shadows?
Absolutely, yes. You know, part of these same groups that were at the Capitol were the ones staging these fights that were fighting against Black Lives Matter protesters in the streets. They were planning these things in the Pacific Northwest all throughout the summer. And the president, Donald Trump, at that time, was okay with this. You know, he said, stand back and stand by to the Proud Boys. He could have told these people to go away and to cut it out, but he did not do that. You know, these people were strategically aligned with the previous White House. And that's really what these investigations are looking into. You know, that's the unspoken thing here, is how much did the president know? How much was he okay with these people fomenting insurrection and then eventually following through with it?
So I want to ask Ben more about what we do to deal with it, because there's been some reporting in recent days that some of these far-right groups who were part of the Capitol riot, like the Proud Boys, are starting to splinter. They're having divisions within their ranks. And on its face, that might seem like a good thing. But the other side of that is that it raises the concern that there are going to be lone extremists who can be more difficult to track. Can you explain that risk?
Yeah, this is always sort of the issue with, you know, people are talking about deplatforming of extremists, you know, QAnon not being allowed on Twitter, or white supremacist groups not being allowed to congregate on Facebook and, you know, spread their messages there. It is a double-edged sword, right? Those people are not allowed to recruit into more normal spaces, into more civilian spaces. If the Proud Boys aren't allowed on Facebook, you know, they have to go to Telegram. Not everybody's grandma's on Telegram. They're not going to be able to get their message out in the same way. However, when those people go into these smaller spaces, these spaces that are not tracked as easily, it's harder to find out what they're actually planning.
And understanding the members of these groups strikes me as a challenging task, Ben, both for you as a reporter and for law enforcement. I mean, many are committing illegal and hateful acts. Without minimizing that, it's also the case that some have been taken advantage of. They've been lied to by people in power. So how do we reconcile those two things?
Yeah, it's really difficult. You know, QAnon is a really good example of this because QAnon is based on this incredibly violent ideology, right? It's based on the premise that all of these people will be rounded up and killed, and everyone will be rooting for it and cheering for it. There will be a gallows. All of these public figures who we know will be murdered in public. That is the end game of QAnon. And that sounds really horrific. That sounds like a terror cell, and that's what it is. But it has wrapped up a lot of American churches, a lot of American grandmas and grandfathers who have no intention of actually committing violence. So, you know, separating those two things is really difficult. A lot of these people are rooting this on like it's a TV show or a serialized book series or something like that, like a Da Vinci Code sort of thing. They think they're getting codes on the internet and that at the end of it, there will be a season finale. Those people are not terrorists, but they are falling into lockstep with a bunch of people who are spouting terrorist ideology. It is really difficult right now for law enforcement to find out what's real and what's a guy just joking around on the internet.
Ben, you know, last June, you spoke with my colleague, Robin Young, about how you had tried to warn Facebook and other social media companies that the spread of violent extremism on those platforms was really getting pretty ugly. And there's a moment in that conversation that has stuck with me because I can hear the emotion in your voice. And so I want to play some of that. Here you are speaking with Robin 9 months ago.
A few weeks ago, I called Facebook and I said, look, I hate being right about this stuff. If you guys don't step up, you and YouTube specifically, if you guys don't step up here, it's going to get really bad really quickly. And they didn't. It is it's devastating to consistently know what's next in this beat. I'm sorry for talking like this, but it's a recurring nightmare that you just get used to, unfortunately.
So Ben, reflect on those words. I mean, do you see social media companies taking the threat of extremism more seriously since then, or do you continue to see your worst fears realized?
The good news is since then, a lot of these companies have taken a lot more seriously. The context around that conversation was there was a guy who had murdered a federal officer, a Boogaloo boy. He had murdered a federal officer, and then I called Facebook because I knew it was getting bad in these Boogaloo spaces. And in between that phone call and that murder, he had killed another person. This guy was on the lam. And all of these groups were still up. This guy had planned this on Facebook and Facebook Messenger and in Facebook groups and Boogaloo groups. And they were just up. They were up on the website available to the public. And they had told me, like, we're making these really narrow distinctions about what's a terror group. And they were doing it to make it so they didn't have to take action against this widespread domestic terror problem they had on their platform. And those distinctions have gone away because I think they realize now that they can abet insurrection. They can abet domestic terror by being a central organizing cog. And they've sort of thrown down the hammer on these groups that had really no differentiation from groups like ISIS, except for the fact that they were American in nature. They used irony as a sort of disguise. And they were mostly white people. And that has changed in the last few months. They are never going to atone for the stuff that they've done, and they're never going to admit that they were, you know, the primary driver of a lot of these problems. But they have gotten better.
Well, it's good to hear that. And I think your story, though, underscores that your beat can be painful, but also very important. And we appreciate you're doing it. Ben Collins covers disinformation, extremism, and the internet for NBC News. We'll link listeners to your reporting at hereandnow.org. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Kyle.